This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
Welcome to the Football Revolution, hosted by Gio, Jules and PK.
You're listening to the Football Revolution, hosted by Gio, Jules and PK. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you with us. Lads, welcome. How are we doing?
Loving it. Always good to be on FNR, Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia and around the world.
I love your manners, PK. You always let age go before beauty.
Well, I have to because Jules has got the FNR intro down pat. So I'll be honest with you, that's the reason why he's going before me.
Oh, so it's nothing to do with age before
Absolutely
beauty.
Not. But I do respect you. You are young fellas, so that's how we go.
Thanks, mate. Look, nice to have a full round this week. So instead of watching, the two games and not really much in it, there's five full games. So there should be no excuses this week. We should have plenty of ammunition or plenty to talk about in the top five. Also, Mariners, we'll talk about this maybe a little bit later. Get a long overdue win with Stadge on his first try. What are your thoughts quickly?
The Stadge effect. How good was that?
Yeah, very impressive. Like I said, he's come in. I think it was a short straw he's drawn with nothing to gain. But in his first attempt, he's got 3 points, and that's been pretty much impossible for him to grab the last full season.
I think it's also too. It's. I'm going to say it was kind of expected. And the reason why I say that, so many times, world football, new coach comes in and the team wins. So well done.
I'll be honest though, as impressive as Mariners were, unimpressive is what you'd give Newcastle. Mm.
Yeah, look, I think you know this too, Jorsey. When they've been playing sudden death for so long now to try and make it in, eventually you run out of gas, right? There's only so many sudden deaths. Every week the coach says, this is the final, this is the final, this is the final. You can't have a million finals. So I think that's probably caught up with them, and as well as the Asian qualifying campaign they have. I think they don't have the deeper squad, so the depth in their squad. So it's basically just something that was going to come and bite them eventually.
Yeah.
Not that I think they would have taken it easy, but I just wonder if they thought, this was the easier game because it was against the Mariners. But you know what? Like it so often happens, you get bitten.
Well, if you're going to choke, right, you don't want it to be in the F3 derby, though, against the team that you don't like. So it was probably a bad time for him to have a hiccup or hit a speed hump, but the Mariners won't be complaining. They'll take any gifts they can get.
They certainly will.
So just two other quick things before we get into this eagerly anticipated top five. So each week we have our goal of the week, which is our Berisha clay statue, which was actually meant to be Ronaldo, but it turned out more to be like the great Berisha. But the one thing I'd quickly want to talk about is, did you guys see the Beckham stunt that James Corden did on Beckham? So pretty much they hit a statue that they were going to unveil to in front of a Galaxy Stadium, and instead they put out a fake one where he had a big jaw and a big bum, and they showed it to him, and he absolutely...
Like
oh, yeah, and he lost his mind, mate. He lost his... And he's such a polite guy. Goes to show what footballers are really like. He's such a polite guy. He just was biting his tongue, but he was just saying, I couldn't show this to my family and my kids, and he asked them to turn the cameras off because he just was so embarrassed. He said, it looks nothing like me. The only thing I like is the hair. So so it goes to show, right, that sometimes
they
get
it was gold.
Yeah, so it was an actual joke, whereas with the Berisha one, it wasn't. The sculptor thought it was amazing until Ronaldo's brother said, mate, there's no possible way I'm even going to show that to my brother, let alone let people think that's him. Yeah. And the last quick thing was we send our hearts and our best wishes out to not only the families of the victims of the Christchurch tragedy, but also to the people of New Zealand in general. It's something that, like I said, it's just a disaster. It's something that everybody wishes didn't happen, but you do actually see the true character of people when something like that does occur. So that's just a quick thing from us at the Football Revolution.
Yep, agreed.
So, Jorsey, what are you calling Match Day 22?
You know what? Match Day 22 was going to be a hard one for me to find a name. Part of me wanted to call it the second class because we had to play, what was it, two rounds on the day after a football match had torn up the pitches. But then I came into calling it pen, no pen, save pen.
So like that, yeah.
Take your pick.
Well, look, we can have either of those. They're both good, mate. So you're on a good streak this week.
You know what? It's about time I delivered something of quality.
I love your work, ref. Get us into this. Come on, let's go.
Into this. Now, I just need to clarify, are we playing for double points this week? Because we did save it from last week because it wasn't really worth it over the split rounds.
Look, I was going to say save it for a rainy day, but the weather we've had the last week and a half has been raining every day, so we might as well just get it out the way. Double points, double pints, double pounders. Just smash it out.
For monsoon week.
Yeah, all we right. might as well.
Well, that takes us in – that's the opportunity for what? You would either go about 6-2, 6-3 in the lead or
– I think it's a two-goal differential at the moment.
It's 5-3 already.
It's 5-3, yeah.
It's 5-3. So that will make it 7-3 PK. That's a big gap.
It'll be 7-3 in the tiebreaker.
I hope you've done your homework.
Oh, yeah, this will be like seeing Eeyore the donkey in Winx. It'll be so far behind me, I won't even have to turn around to see him.
Like no problem. We are a salary cap show, so we're looking to try and fair play it across the board. So you never know what could happen.
Are you going to let Eeyore go first?
Well, we will start it off with Eeyore. As you referenced, the Barisha Award, the golden clay statue, our goal of the week. There was a few contenders. PK, did you bring up?
There were a few contenders. I'm going to throw my hat in the ring and go for David Williams. Fantastic strike who basically buried the Wanderers with the third goal in the first half. I think he's having a phenomenal season. It's probably indicated by how well he struck that outside the box and how well he's going. So I think it was an assist by Krishna. Williams, without even taking a touch, has absolutely bended that past Janjetovic, who had absolutely no chance of saving that. So David Williams, you are my nomination for this week's goal around.
Short and sweet. I'm surprised that you'd pick a goal against the Wanderers, but since Janjetovic let so many in, you're due for a few good goals against him. Yeah, it wasn't a bad one. I'm surprised you didn't pick one of the other goals from that game, but you never know. Gio might have that in his bag. Who are you coming up with?
Mate, to be honest, that was actually one of mine. I really thought that it was a great team goal with Rufus flick and then Williams' fantastic finish. So I'm going to have to scramble here and come up with something on my toes. Look, I know that... Mandy's free kick against the Wanderers is what they gave goal of the week. But to be honest, I thought that was Janjeta Goose. I can't believe he didn't dive. It was a bit slow motion for me. So look, I'm going to go back to what I know and what I thought was a bit of quality. And that was Choisi's goal against Brisbane Roar. So that ball from Choisi, I know he gets a lot of stick sometimes about certain things he does or doesn't do. But that ball from him, look, it can only help being around Honda, watching the sort of balls Honda does. But I think his passing game has gone to a new level this year. And he's creating, not just chances, he's creating like monoplata. So, look, the goalkeeping wasn't the greatest, but Barbarossa still hit the target with a very clean finish. And like I said, for what the people of Christchurch have been through this week, you can never begrudge Barbarossa scoring a double.
Is this Choisi or Barbarossa's?
So yeah, Barbarossa's fishing.
You threw every other name under there.
So through ball, to confirm, through ball through from Choisi, finish from Barbarossa. So he scored his double. I just thought it was a class ball, a class finish. And look, we'll exclude the goalkeeping because he should have had the near post. But you can only do what you're given. Yes, the second goal.
All right. So yeah, so I had Choisi because of Honda flying through. Barisha made a statement, and then it was actually Barbarossa that banged it in.
Oh, possibly. Mate, I was talking about the people of Christchurch, mate. I got a bit emotional, so give me a break.
given that I'm not really sure you knew who you were putting forward, I'm surprised no one brought up Botiak's classy finish. That was just absolute class the way he saw the keeper off the line and put in that little chip as well. So
you can't give yourself a point, Josie.
I got to give him a special mention, but I'm surprised. But I will give it to that clean hit from David Williams, and I love. Two things. A, it was a clean hit, left keep with no chance, and it's always good just hearing the clip of the post as the ball flicks off that and goes around the net. So PK early out, 1-0. And you know what, Gio, wasn't too bad. You put one in there.
Can't be great every week.
That's right. Seeing as we go from goals, we go to saves. And again, I think there was a couple that were out there definitely putting their hands up. So our Bozza, save of the week. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. I don't mind taking a 0-2 deficit. So for me, I thought Reddy's save against Adelaide from the sensational Goodwin's header. I don't know how he clawed that back. He got his hand around it. It was basically past him, and somehow he got his hand there and kept that ball out. So I think Reddy. I had Reddy a few weeks ago, and he got me a point. So I'm going to double down and just try and bank on another Reddy special.
What is double
point? I'm ready for another point, Julesy.
I think the brilliance of that was actually his timing. He managed to read the bounce of it as well and get a full flush hand on it.
I agree, mate. If you're agreeing with me and saying that was fantastic, then I'm not arguing. Yeah, I agree. It was magnificent.
No worries. I think there was better. I wonder if PK picks it.
Nice response, Geo. I can't go past. There was another good save in that game, but I'm going to go to a different game. I can't go past Ben Kenny's double save. So not only has he saved the penalty that had to be retaken, he's then re-saved the actual penalty again after there was an encroachment from Georgescu and basically won the game for the Mariners. So, I mean, look, it might not be actually the best save of the round, but I just think that in the magnitude of the game, given that back's against the wall, he's saved the penalty that had to be retaken. I think Ben Kenny's the hero for me.
Usually when we're looking at these saves, right, it comes down to not only the quality of the save, but also the importance, right? So importance for the Mariners, I agree. But quality of save, honestly, if Jules and I went and played lawn bowls and he bowled a ball down and I dived from behind a couple of old men and saved it, that would have been the same quality of a save. It was straight down the middle.
No,
it was rubbish.
No, it was to the side.
The two penalties were horrible.
He guessed both ways.
So, ref?
I think it was very important. It was still down to his left and solid. I'm surprised he didn't pick Ben Kennedy's save from earlier in the game. I think it might have been Georgescu again on the volley when he managed to palm one away that I'd pretty much started to think was going in the net. But for the pressure of what was it taken in, I think the second one about the 98th minute, Ben Kennedy gets it for me and PK gets a 2-0 lead.
Rubbish save. And he didn't. The reason he didn't see the Ben Kennedy first one is because he was out getting popcorn. He always gets popcorn and snacks during the game.
Do you know my routine?
I do know your routine, mate. I should know. You're one of my co-hosts. I should know exactly what you do.
All right.
So I'm going to take it into our Zelich Award, the best reaction from a fan, player, coach, ball boy, aisle attendant, whoever you want to see. Where's the best reaction that you found? Geo, because you're getting bitter and you really need to save this week, I'm going to give you first billing on this one and see what you come up with.
Look, I was going to say there was a fan at the Mariners game who had tattoos all over him. Now, it's bad enough if it was one of those fake tattoos, but it looks like they were real, and I'm guessing he must have got them when they won the championship, God, a million years ago, because there's no one that would have been getting Mariners tattoos this year, especially ones that don't wash off. So, yeah. Look, that was going to be mine, but to be honest, and considering I'm down 2-0, I'm still going to stick with the plan. I was going to fall on my sword and say I don't want a point for this, but what I did want to point out was the two reactions I really enjoyed and I really felt was Barbarossa's kneeling down when he scored and also Krishna kneeling down and doing the heart symbol when he scored just as a sign of respect for the people in of Wellington. So for me, like I said, I'm happy to throw this away and pretty much lose this and give and draw the scores at 5-5 just because, like I said, I just felt that was a great thing from them and I had a lot of respect for both those men for what they did.
Let's be honest, you couldn't have picked a better one for the week. It was classy. You know, the world rises above these type of tragedies. That was just, I thought, a really classy way of doing something. And both from a New Zealand team, one from one of the best exports from New Zealand football at the moment. So for me, PK, good luck.
Yeah, no, look, I absolutely agree with Joe's points there in relation to the reaction. I think there might have been one better where the Wanderers and the Phoenix were actually in a huddle before the game. So it's a sign of their solidarity. So they were both basically in the minute silence in a huddle, both teams integrated together. So I thought that was really special. You know, football around the world, they have a minute silence because someone might be passing away or might be an incident that's taken place and you see the team's other side of the halfway, the circle indeed. But the fact they were actually huddling up, I thought that was quite special and unique. I don't think I've ever seen that in a football match. So as much as, the celebrations I absolutely agree with, but I think, you know, it's quite unique to see both teams huddling, holding, linking arms like they're about to sing a team song before a match starts or in a minute silence.
It was a very big show of solidarity and togetherness in such a divisive space. Good one, Peter. You have put it up there. Look, in the interest of keeping the game alive as well, I'd actually put down for my own. I thought Barbarossa's and Krishna's sort of respectful celebration or honour to the victims of the cause, that's going to get my points. So that leaves us at 2-1.
We all know much more you can say. We all know the three of us, right? Like what sort of effect football has on us. But then, you like I said, you know, all of a sudden something like that happens, and it has equally, if not more effect on you. So it just goes to show, right, that you know, as much as we love football, there's other things in life a lot more important. So
definitely,
yeah, that's it. It almost seems a little bit wrong to follow that up, but with our goose of the week still needing a name, but there's a few people keep putting their hands up for it, so. We'll see who takes the title of the Goose of the Year. But our Goose of the Week, I think there was a couple of opportunities for Goose of the Week. I'm curious. PK, who you got there?
Look, I went a bit left field again this week, try to be a bit different. But I've gone with the A-League administrator fixture choosers, whatever you want to call them. Now, there's two points to that. First of all, tell me why two A-League games were played the day after NRL games have been played the day before. So, look, I know that the A-League fixtures are out first and the NRL draw will come out, but all I'm asking for is give the fans or give us some flexibility to change the game, whether, you know, another venue, take it to a regional area. I don't know what it is, but let's be a bit more sort of switched on. Our A-League, our team, this is our best brand of football in the country. We shouldn't be playing on cut-up, chopped-up NRL fields from the day before. So that's the first part of it. The second part of it, too, is the scheduling of matches. What is Melbourne City playing Sydney FC on a Sunday night at Leichhardt Oval when there's 6,000 people there turn up to the game? Like, I just don't... I know it's good for TV, but seriously, like, we've got to cut these... The only place 7 o'clock game will work in the eastern states is Melbourne, because you know they're going to go to the game. It's not going to work in Sydney. Play that game... I know there was rain on the weekend and all that, so maybe it's a blessing in disguise because the rain stopped, but we can't be playing Sunday night games. We're only getting 6,500 people turning out to watch Melbourne City play Sydney FC, which is third versus fourth on the table. It's just not good enough.
Yeah, if you're going to play a Sunday game, it's got to be a family day. Sticking it there just shows that we're just trying to fit in around someone else's code.
I'm enjoying IKEA at the moment. You keep saying every week, or freedom, whatever it's called, I think outside the box. Every week you keep saying, I think outside the box, left field. I'm enjoying this, mate. I'm loving this.
You bought the bedside table?
Mate, I love that. Yeah, we love that. This is fantastic. We'll get a bookshelf to put some of your autobiographies in.
Yeah, why not?
All right, who you got for us, Gio?
Oh, look, mine's a bit of a wrapped up in one package here. But for me, the Goose of the Week is it's mainly the referee in the game between the Phoenix and also the Wanderers. So firstly, it was Kamau's was not even a penalty. Then the ref looks at it on his iPad. Then he gives a penalty. And it shouldn't have been Kamau. It should have been Karma. Because then up steps Wanderers marquee man who starts on the bench and he scuffs the penalty. So Bo Yeoman or whatever his name is, he just walks up and just absolutely fluffs his lines. And then on top of that, when I thought the ref couldn't have done anything worse, he gives Krishna, who's a standout and fantastic in the league at the moment, he gives him a second yellow, which results in a red for a loose floppy arm for hitting Llorente. No, Llorente dived. If Llorente spent as much time perfecting his finishes, like that one that he hit into the koalas in the first half.
Yeah, fixing his hair.
Yeah, as he did doing that dive, he'd be the best player in the world. So I just felt like it was poor refereeing. It was just an absolute joke. And then, like I said, I don't know how long the delay was trying to come up with that decision that it should have been a penalty. But even the Wanderers marquee man knew it wasn't. That's why he miskicked the ball deliberately and said, let's just play on and see who wins this game fair and square.
Yeah, it's certainly... The referee didn't do himself any justice out of that game, and we pick on referees a lot for decisions, but I thought he had a bit of a poor one, even when he had assistance. The sending off of Krishna, you know what, if he pulled up the foul that was on Krishna probably 3 or 4 seconds before that, and then Lorenzo, he kind of just fell into the back of him, was all over it. At what point are you sort of going, there was intent from Krishna? He's trying to keep his balance. He's got someone that's jumping all on his back for a free ride. Yeah, for me, the referee is a goose of the week that week, because not only that, you've now robbed the Phoenix, but also the viewing audience, the current leading goal scorer for the next game.
Even PK the win as well.
Jersey, considering that you do know a few refs and that, are they allowed to use their common sense? Because if he cocked his elbow and his elbow was bent right, when it's a straight arm like that, you're more chance of dislocating your elbow than you are of doing any damage to the guy. I mean, you look at the guy fall down and you know it was the world's worst acting, right? Like, he wouldn't even get a job on the Bold and the Beautiful in Spain with that fall to the ground. So I just don't get, are they not allowed to make any decisions based on common sense?
Well, at the risk of upsetting the few friends I have in referees' books, because you know how much friends I do make the referees, I think common sense gets checked in the change room and they just come out with their new tough guy attitude in the rule book.
And their iPads.
It is hugely frustrating. And once again, I'll start to see it. We've seen it happen in other codes that have started to rely on all the video assessments. Things just start going downhill, and the confidence and the quality of referees start to diminish as well. So goose of the week goes to the referees. We know they generally take that pretty easily, and they think they're always right. The fact that I get frustrated is they never have to comment on it as well and never have to have any ownership of it. So it all gets done behind closed doors. So good luck to them. They can have as many video reviews
so
sessions.
I got the point, did I? By the sounds of it.
No, you didn't.
It's the tiebreaker, and I'm done.
I'll tell you what, I will give you the tiebreaker for the double points, double everything. PK, you get to go first for your good, bad, and the ugly.
Before he does, I'm happy to give you, I just want the 2 points. Jules can have a double pints and you can have a double pounders, PK. So if everyone's happy with that, we can just come up with an agreement now and sign off and we're all done.
No.
Tell you what, 2 points are going on all right now.
Yeah, I know. Come on, PK, what do you got?
I went Roy Krishna all in one. Good, great goal, great assist with Williams' assist for the third goal in the game that we've already discussed. The bad was a slash between, as we've already discussed, the referee's poor performance in giving that second yellow card, but also too, I must sort of disagree with you both there. I think the flying helicopter from Krishna, I mean, I think having a bit more game awareness, knowing you're on a yellow card and any contact with a player, you know, whether the referee missed it or not, and if Llorente's down on the ground, it's going to get reviewed by VAR and he's probably going to get sent off anyway. So I think that's kind of probably bad management from Krishna's side. And the ugly part about it too is that he will miss the blockbuster next week against the Jets. So that's my good, bad, ugly all in one.
Not bad. Yeah, so mine was the F3 Derby, the Mariners versus Newcastle. So the good for me was that Stadge gets the club a much-needed and desperate win, considering it was St. Patrick's Day too. That was probably harder for them to find than a four-leaf clover, but somehow Stadge did. So congratulations for that, and we're big fans of Stadge. So great for him and great for the club. The bad for me was Jonathan Aspro being a double agent. Now, I know he's leaving at the end of the year to go to... He's going to the new Melbourne team? I'm pretty sure he's signed.
Yeah.
But when you're up 3-2 and you've been desperate, you haven't even seen a win, let alone got one, why would you bring a guy down and pull Roy O down? There was still a cross to be done. There was still a lot of work to be done. And he's gone ahead and made the decision he's going to footy tackle him from behind. I just didn't understand that. For me, that looked like I said, he either had picked the score or he's a double agent.
He's watching the Fulham goalkeeper.
Yeah, but he's already throwing points away for his club before he even leaves. So that was my bad. And then the ugly for me was Roy O'D's double donkey. So he couldn't hit them any worse. he couldn't have hit them any worse if he tried. If he had thought about the worst penalty I could take, he got it. And then if he thought about the second worst penalty he could ever take, he'd hit that one as well. So hopefully he's just got those worst ones out of his bag. You'd expect his next one goes in a pigeon because there's no way he could hit two worse than that.
He won't be taking the next one, put it that way.
Hang on, it could be if he wants to get the Hogba award.
That's true.
If he wants to do that, there's certain guys we've seen who have taken bad penalties and the next week they step up again. So one being Central Coast Simon.
Central Coast Simon and Krishna.
Yeah, so that's my good, bad and ugly, and that was the F3 Derby.
Mate, it wasn't bad. I quite like that. One could have been forgiven for thinking there was a glitch in the matrix and you were watching a replay of the first bad penalty.
True.
Or maybe the big Roy O'D, and I do love the Irishman, he was just thinking, you know what? What did I do wrong the first time? If I do it again, I might get to learn from it. But that was definitely ugly from him, especially when he had the opportunity to, I suppose, ruin Central Coast Day in the derby and at least draw his side a point, which would have kept him in some type of semi-sniff of a top... How many do we play? A top 8, top 6, top 14 16. Out of 10?
Tops off.
You know?
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah. So either way, I think, this is really interesting. You've left it a bit of a hard decision, actually, for what's a very important 2 points.
It should be really easy for you, Jolsey.
It kind of is.
Come on, give it to Colin Burris. Right. I played it up well. Come on.
No, you've done well. I think, PK, you started so strongly and then you started to rest on the laurels because I'm giving that good, bad and ugly to Gio.
Check the rule book,
which
ref,
puts
mate.
Him out to 7-3.
Check the rule what's book, that? Mate. Check the rule book, mate. Oh, that's what's gone wrong, mate.
You know what? It's nothing to do with that, PK. I think you put in a very gallant fight. The simple fact is I've lost so many tiebreakers. It was only a matter of time before I got one right.
You're the Mariners this week.
Yeah.
After 7 years, you finally won.
I've finally broken that duck egg of tiebreaks. Before I was like 0-7. Now I'm 1-7.
Well, look, if you're putting in that perspective, I can sleep easy tonight.
Yeah.
No worries. He's come from the dead.
That's the end of our top five. I've probably jumped the gun here and stolen Jules' thunder, but I'm super excited that I've taken a 7-3 lead. Back after the break, joining us in the Players' Lounge is Matthew Maiora.
Welcome to the Football Revolution, hosted by Gio, Jules and PK.
Welcome back to the Football Revolution. Joining us tonight in the Players' Lounge is an impressive family man with a wealth of local and overseas experience. He's still killing it in the NPL. Please welcome to the show, Matthew Maiora. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good, good. All good.
Mate,
how are you?
Great, thanks. Thanks for your time tonight. Mate, look, can we start by asking you, we'll start with our 9 at 9, so our 9 questions. What's your nickname? What do the boys call you?
To be honest, they actually call me the El Chorizo.
The El Chorizo?
I like this.
The El Chorizo. It's a Uruguayan sausage. So, yeah, we keep that one in the change rooms. But, yeah, they call me the Chorizo.
Mate, I hope you keep it in the change rooms.
If not, it's in the wife's handbag.
Mate, can we ask you, funniest football story or experience?
Oh, well, I've got a few. This one was overseas in Indonesia, actually. Yeah, we're playing a cup game, and it was 1-0 at half time. I set up the first goal for one of the imports there. Then it was 1-0 with about 5 minutes to go. Then we put the pressure on, and I scored the winner. I scored a volley from, like, literally probably the penalty area, and I've never seen so many people just run on the pitch, like, literally just mauled everyone. And there was about like 3 minutes to go of extra time. Anyway, all the police and army came to kick everyone off the pitch. And next minute, I'm just in my boots. My boots got stolen. I'm just in my socks and my tights. My runners underneath that. I've got my bike tights on. And I'm like, yeah, I had no jersey, no shorts, nothing. And another import player, same thing, same deal. We just got literally raped for our clothes. And it was about 3 minutes to go, so we had to actually look for spare change of shorts and a jersey just to finish the game.
But, I hope they didn't steal the chorizo.
No, they couldn't. They couldn't take that away.
Mate, lucky you're in good shape, too.
I've never seen, like, it literally was like you throw a piece of meat and you just have wolves just go maul it. That's what it felt like. So, yeah, I had no boots, and I was waiting for my boots to come from out of that. From Australia, and yeah, I had no boots. I had to play with some other guy's boots from the other side of the team.
Mate,
that's gold.
Mate,
I love that.
We'll touch on a bit later about your playing career, but is that part of the reason why you came home?
No, I came home because people that know me, I'm a family person. I'm a family guy. Grandma got sick at one stage when I was overseas, and I came back early just to spend time with her. And then, yeah, I decided, like, you know, I'm going to come home just to be around family because, yeah, I was just missing family too much. But look, I was overseas for about 6.5 years, 7 years, so done my time. So, yeah, now I'm giving back to the wife and the kids.
You're a good bloke, El Chorizo. Yeah, you're a good man.
My question to start you off, who's your favourite A-League player currently?
Probably one of my mates, Jimmy Petratos.
Friend of the show, yeah. He's flying again this year.
Yeah, he's done well. He started off, you know, a bit lagging back, but now he's starting to, you know, rev up a bit more. So I had a chat with him a couple of weeks ago. So no, he's in good form. He's in good nick now for hopefully they stay in the top six so he can play semi-finals and all that again.
You have a second guy that's told us how good a guy Dimi is. So George Lambert, we had on late last year. He told us that he couldn't make his wedding, but he had a good excuse. He had the World Cup on, so we let that slide.
Oh, trust me, it was a massive wedding. I heard about it.
Has he tried to talk you through that strike he hit the other week?
Oh, trust me, I've seen better strikes than that. When he was playing back in the day with me in Sydney Olympic, he's got two good feet on him. And he's got balance and everything, and he's got vision. That's the main thing that you don't see much in the A League these days. He's a bit of vision off a play. Like, he already knows what to do before even the ball comes to him.
Mate, the boys have a question for you. They've been asking me this for weeks now. Can you tell us, do you know why he keeps going over and kung-fuing the corner flag?
Oh, mate, I have no idea. But I think he's just a bit of anger problems. Because he can't kick nothing at home, so he might as well kick the corner flag.
I did actually like when he did notorious Conor McGregor last week when he scored the bomb, but we can work that one out. I just couldn't work out why he was going over and hitting the helpless corner flags.
Yeah, I think because you can't get a yellow flag for kicking a corner flag. You get a yellow flag for everything else. So with your good mate Dimmy there, does that mean you would be a Newcastle supporter?
No.
No.
I'm actually a Perth Glory supporter because they're the one that gave me a chance to actually pursue my career. So, and also I'm really pretty close with Bruno Fornaroli, so that's good to see him go to...
Fornaroli, he's one of our friends.
Yeah, so that's good to see one of my companions, Bruno Fornaroli, to go to Perth Glory next year. So,
which team do you think you would best suit in the current A-League setup?
Definitely not the Mariners.
No, definitely. I was about to say, not the Mariners.
I think
you need a whole 18 squad.
They might have to clone you.
I don't know. It's a tough question. Maybe if Bruno goes there, we'll probably have a good combination together if I go back to Perth. But I really, really doubt that Popper will take me over there.
Mate, we'd have to play a formation of about six up front with you joining Bruno and the rest of them.
Probably.
We can play the elimination game here. He's not playing Mariners, and we're definitely not sending you to City, because if Joyce doesn't play Bruno, he's not playing you. So both you guys will be parked on the bench. So there's two down.
I like how Sydney FC are playing at the moment. It's a lot of good combinations. A lot of young kids coming through also. So maybe I'll fit there with Alex Moss. He's not the fun.
After watching the way the Mariners and Brisbane have gone this year, we reckon we could put a team together of a guest on our show and they would spank both those teams. So maybe you can just play for the Football Revolution All-Stars. Could be your next side.
Yeah, maybe.
Mate, that'd be good. It'll be a big signing on
fee. Maybe we can get a whole new squad out. Maybe we can get Bozza out in goals or something like that.
Why not?
I reckon Bozza would be good for five in there.
Yeah, I reckon.
As long as we don't mess up his hair.
I've got a good story about him. Don't worry about that.
We might come back to that later. Mate, what do you like to do away from football?
Spend time with my family, my kids, my little ones. Every minute that I have with them when I'm not at football, three times a week plus a weekend. But yeah, my little ones take the most out of me.
Any future footballers amongst the kids?
Oh, look, my daughter's got a good left and right peg on her. My son's all about the iPad and, he loves to jump around and just, I reckon he's going to be like a, he's going to be in the circus, his kid. He loves just doing Supermans off the couch and all that. So I've already gone through three couches.
Does your wife say that comes from you and your son does all the crazy stuff? Is that your,
that's definitely me.
Definitely
that's
your definitely genes, me. Huh?
yeah, he's got the craziness from me.
Mate, can I ask you, you can dob someone in here and like I said, they might not like it, but we'd love it. Worst roommate on away trips?
I've got to say, we're on the trip with Sydney Olympic in Brisbane. We're playing the Greek Cup and all that there. And I was actually with Anthony Hartshorn. I'm not too sure if you remember him. He was an upcoming star back in the day. And, I roomed with him and he decided to wash his socks in the sink. And we had a balcony and all that, and I washed all my things, like, downstairs in the washer, like you do, and hung everything up. He washed everything in the sink, and then he decided to pull all his socks and jerseys behind the TV, because the TV is nice and hot, and he wanted to dry them out there. And the room just reeked of everything. I couldn't even sleep there, and I said to Atec Gensch, was actually my coach, and I go, mate, I can't sleep with this guy. He's drying his socks on the TV, like literally. So
that is a new one.
They had to give me another room. Like he's bad.
What reality show would you want to be on?
I don't know, one of the cooking shows or Home Renos.
Maybe a barbecue show. One of the, those barbecues, how they do all the ribs and the steak on the barbecue. I think it was on.
Oh, the barbecue cook-offs.
Yeah, the barbecue cook-off. Yeah, I feel the background is South American. That's all we're good for.
We're coming over.
So if you come to my house on a Sunday, that's where you're getting. Yeah, that's where you're going to get a barbecue.
Done deal.
Mate, I just heard an invite. We're there.
Trust me. All you got to do is look at the smoke and just follow it.
I'll bring Bruno with me. I'll bring Fornaroli with us.
Trust me, he wouldn't mind somebody scorching him up there.
Beautiful. Now, before a game, what pump-up music do you listen to? What gets you going?
I love my Spanish music. Bit of like old school energy music and all that sorts of stuff. I'm old fashioned. I sometimes listen to like AC/DC, but yeah, mostly just Spanish and some high energy music just to pump me up. And the boys go, "Well, what the hell?"
Bit of Alex K. Is that what you?
Yeah, I take all their love songs, dedications, and all that off the speaker, and I just put my music on.
So you assume the DJ duties?
Yeah, I have to. If I can't get pumped up, I can't get pumped up on Justin Bieber.
No, I agree.
what's that?
Stick to Alex K, mate. Pump the Alex K.
Yeah, Alex K. All those old school boys.
And just to finish off the 9 questions, mate. Famous person, past or present, you'd like to meet?
I'd like to meet probably Zidane. You know, feel like his character, how he is as a person. Maybe Cafu from the Brazilian national team. He played in AC Milan. All those guys. And I've met one of the greatest, Batistuta. I met him. He's a top bloke.
When he was in Perth?
When he was in Perth and when I was playing overseas. I was in a tour in Argentina, and one of his cousins were playing against us, and he was there watching in the crowd. So I had the pleasure of meeting him. Probably those guys.
And they get a good feed too, the three of them. So if they knew what you were cooking, they'd be there.
For sure.
So that's away with the lighthearted questions, and we'll just pass over to you, PK, for a couple of serious football questions. What do you got for Matthew?
I'll try my best over here. It's been a bit all pumped up at the moment, so I'm ready to go. Matthew, you burst onto the scene in 2009, being crowned the Golden Boot in the NPL, playing at Olympic. So you had a stellar season, 15 goals in 20 games. We've seen Sydney Olympic being, I guess, a springboard club for a lot of players. I mean, tell us about your time at Olympic and I guess how that sort of gave you the opportunity to propel opportunities overseas and into the A-League.
Back then, it's so different to how football is played now. Like over there, we're all just training hard. Everyone's going into tackles. But it grew me as a person going to Olympic. I had to leave where I was to, if I wanted to become a footballer, I had to get out of my comfort zone. And yeah, Olympic, I think I was there for about 3 seasons before I got the Golden Boot. But that proved me as a player and more maturity with playing with other senior players in that squad. But look, the Golden Boot, like I say, it's not a individual effort. It's actually a team effort. And as a senior player now, like you try to develop some young kids that, you know, they can make something out of it.
Yeah.
No, you know, and yeah, like I was one of those young kids that was very hungry and determined to make the distance, to go, not just play A-League, to go overseas and try to make a name for myself in that option. And also, short story, it's to prove a point for my dad also, because my dad he just wanted my other brother to play. And my other brother was talented. He had so much talent, like, but he didn't like training in preseason. I was the complete opposite. And then that was to prove me and to my father, like, you know, I've done it. I've actually done it, Dad. Like, for him to be proud. And then the moment I played A-League, I got the phone call from Dad. And, yeah, it was just really emotional. And he was over the moon. And even going overseas as well. So
that year when you did score 1,000 goals, it feels like, and you were picked up on loan for Perth Glory, a striker who's in form and doing those sort of figures, were there other A-League clubs that were knocking on the door? Or
yeah, there were. I had a stint with Central Coast for a bit when Laurie McKinnon was there.
That's when they were good.
Yeah, and that's when Bosler was there in goals as well with my mate Danny Vukovic. I was actually living at Danny Vukovic's house for a bit because me and him grew up in the West. So he's one of my good mates. So I had a stint there, and then it was between either go to Perth or wait for Central Coast to say yes, but I just decided to go with Perth. David Mitchell came down, he saw me, and he goes, "Mate, that's what I need. I need that now." So I just, you know, packed my bags and left.
Hard to say no to, wasn't it?
No, you can't say no to it. So, like, I say this to everyone, like, even at my work, if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. If it's an opportunity, go do it. So it was just meant to be. It was in the right time. I was in the right place, and my body was for it. So I wasn't going to sit around and twiddle in my thumbs and wait for Central Coast to come back to me and say, "Hey, we've got a spot now. Do you want to come?" So
No, I just decided myself and then I just left.
And you spent, so after your time at Glory, you also then had some exposure and some time playing abroad. So I think you played in Indonesia, Fiji and India. Tell us about that. I mean, without going into too much detail, tell us about those experiences and where you enjoy playing the most out of those three locations.
Well, those three locations, also there was Uruguay. Played in Uruguay for about 3 years.
Yep.
But the exposure is totally different. Like when I rocked up to Indonesia, it was all about football. There was no other sport there. We had no rugby or cricket or, you know, AFL. They just focused on football over there, and they were just football fanatics. Like I was telling you guys in that grand final for that cup match, we played in the stadium in Jakarta, and I think you can fit about 110,000 or 120,000 people in that stadium. Like, just walking out, warming up, and you see all these people just screaming. It's beyond, like, very hard to explain. And people are saying here, like, you get a, you know, NRL game, 80,000 people, you know, in the grand final. But this was everyday games.
Yeah.
We were always getting that number.
That's amazing.
So, Indonesia was amazing. I made good friends and I still kept in contact with people in Indonesia. Fiji was more like a short stint stuff, just helping out Lotoka, but also getting a bit more exposure in the Oceania Cup. And then I went to Uruguay for 3 years, played there, and that was a different experience. It's more position, more with the ball on their feet, but less running. So over there, when I went over there, I was just, they're like, mate, can you stop running? Because that's all we got taught is running. No skill-wise, like, I was literally in skill-wise, I was, like, way back. And it took me about, you know, 3-4 months just to get to their level of skill and dribbling and a bit more vision. But I was still running all over them with my pace and with my cardio.
Is there any big names that you were playing with or against over there at the time?
Yeah, I played against Rakova when he was in Danubio. So Alvaro Rakova, when he started, like, now, like, he started with his career starting to die out, like, he was playing in Danubio. Played against Bruno when he was in Nacional. And then mostly, like, players that were in the national team, like, starting to come out of the national team because they were getting older. Yeah, like, Sheron Ton and Rodriguez and all that from Peñarol. So, yeah. Few big names, but yeah, I had a good stint in Uruguay.
Mate, you've basically played everywhere and had so many experiences in domestic football. Is there anywhere you wish you had gone?
Probably Europe. I couldn't get there because of the European passport. Because over there you have to play for your national team. Apparently, they didn't care what level of football you played at, but you have to play at least one game for your national team for them to even look at you. Not too sure how things change now. It's probably the same thing. But Europe, yeah, probably I wouldn't mind having a good run there. But you can't wish for everything. So
I think you've done pretty well, yeah.
You can't tick every box, mate. You've done enough. So, yeah, don't be greedy.
Done enough,
yeah.
Boxes.
leave something for the rest of us.
Yeah, I'll leave it for the other guys that have European passports.
And you got the upcoming season, so you're at St. George again this year?
Yeah, I stuck with St. George. Look, they twisted my arm to play for another year. And at the end of the day, I got looked after well by the club. And, yeah, I got offers from other clubs to go to. But I'm a very loyal person when it comes to if I've been looked after well, like, why can't I do the same back to you? It's back in return. And that's how I work in that sense.
What are the ambitions for St. George this year?
Look, our ambitions to be top six, to make it in the semi-finals and to prove a point, not just for ourselves, for the whole league, because everyone thinks that we're going to get relegated. Now, look, we've had two games that we lost that we shouldn't lost because we should have just punished our opponent in front of goals. It's just lack of finishing from the young kids, and that's what we have. We have a young squad. It's probably just me and another guy that we're the oldest guys there, but everyone else is like 19, 21, 22, in your 20s, and that's about it. It's just more, you didn't need a bit more conviction in front of goals, and that's what's lacking in the boys. I think a bit more confident, if we get the confident on board. But we're playing good football. That's the thing, like, we're moving the ball around, we're getting chances, but it's just not our day.
Yeah, the results will come.
Yeah, the results will come. Look, it's only two rounds. Yeah. At the end of the day, everyone's saying, "Oh yeah, that's a wooden spoon," but everyone expected Bonnerick to be up there. They've had two losses on the trot, and so have Mounties. Like, and that's what I'm saying to the boys. Like, well, don't look at us. Like, everyone else has had bad days in the office.
Mate, you're making this is getting harder for us every week, because every time we get another guest on like you that we like, well, last week we had Sean Rooney, this time we got you. So this is getting harder and harder for us because we have to support every team. We don't. So there's going to be games we go to. We're going to be wearing shorts, shirts, socks, all from different teams.
Sounds good to me. I reckon whoever scores a goal, you just put their jersey on. That's about it.
Well, what we can do is if all three of us just wear different jerseys, we can just go sit in the car when we're losing, and if we're winning, we just pop out.
I reckon that sounds a good idea with a chorizo in your hand or something like that with a
funnel. Mate, honestly, I think you'll start to get top of the pile if you start doing food bribes with the three of us. We can be bought. Trust me.
It could be dumb.
Biggest influence on your career?
Probably my father. My biggest influence has to be him.
And biggest fan.
And my biggest influence on my kids, coming to watch me play. Like, even on the weekend, it was my birthday on the Sunday, but we lost the game. But seeing them have a smile on their face just to be there is amazing. Even all the young kids, the supporters, like, yeah, we let them down, but at the end of the day, they're there to support us. But my biggest influence would be my dad. He's the one who always told me what I need to do. He'll never tell you you've played a good game. There's always something that you've done something wrong. But he's actually said it in a good way, my dad. So, yeah, he has to be the biggest influence in me. And even me, he's my biggest influence just having kids. The way I act with my kids is how he acts when he was acting with me when I was a little one. So it's just literally even playing games with my kids, it's literally like my dad was playing games with me and my brothers.
Your kids are in good hands then, because you turn out pretty well.
Sometimes the missus goes, "Stop throwing him around." So all my kids, I start doing the helicopter and all that, so he doesn't like it.
Mate, we can't, with the way your career's gone, mate, we can't begrudge his methods. Whatever methods he's used, it's worked. So, mate, I think we could quite happily say that's a great path for your kids. What advice would you give to young players, mate, coming through, or, you know, eventually to your kids?
At the end of the day, you got to have passion behind anything that you do. If it's your work that you do, you know, day to day, or if you're passionate about football, you want to become something at it, focus on it. Focus on what your weaknesses are and just train on it. My weaknesses was my left foot and my volleys on my left, and then all of a sudden I've actually scored more goals on my left than my right, to be honest. So, yeah, just for a young kid to literally, if he wants to be something, don't worry about going out, being with your friends. If you have good friends and friends that care for you, they're always going to be there for you. But at the end of the day, just be passionate of what you do and give it 100% and have that desire, that fire of winning. Yeah, it's good to win. It's a drug, but my missus doesn't talk to me when I come home when we lose because she knows I'm a bit upset, but then I get over it. But, yeah, for a young kid that's coming through, is just to focus on themselves, what their weaknesses are, and just keep training. Whatever the coach says, just, you know, take it on the chin and just go with it.
Mate, that's great advice, and I wish if I had my time again, I'd make sure I have no mates and never speak to any girls, and I would have been a lot better off. So,
trust me, that's
the path I should have taken.
I didn't go out till I was about 23, 24.
And then you made up for it.
And yeah, like I'm actually making up for it, like probably these days. But no, I've decided myself not to do that because I had a dream, I had a passion, and I had goals set for myself to become something. And my friends, my true friends, stuck with me. The other guys that were jealous, I don't talk to them anymore, so they're not friends at all. If you have friends like that, so yeah, that's the best advice I can give a young kid coming through.
Bravo,
good life choices there. Final question for the night, Matthew. If you could change one decision in your career, what would that have been?
probably not to go into a tackle, and then I got actually creamed and I done my ACL. This was a couple of years ago. But and then I missed probably half a season just in the sideline, just watching my team play, and I couldn't even do nothing to help them. Injuries, please. If I can wish stuff in, injuries. I hate them with a passion, but they come with old age and old legs. But I wouldn't change nothing for the world. Like, I've had an amazing, even I was talking to my wife about it the other day, I've had an amazing career playing overseas, played against a few guys, collected jerseys. I've got friends that play overseas at the moment with Matty German, Danny Vukovic, Ian Ramsey, all those guys I played with back in the day. Yeah, I wouldn't change a thing. Just I would actually change not to go into that tackle that done my ACL a few years ago. So that's the probably one thing I would change.
I could agree with that one. I've pulled one of those tackles too, and strikers aren't meant to make tackles.
Yours was so. Coming off the bench, Jersey. Yours was slipping on a banana peel coming off the bench, Jersey.
And the worst thing is I actually won the ball and the ref gave me a yellow card and I was on the floor.
I gave
him a mouthful and he's like, yeah, you went into the tackle, but I'm like, okay, so what? I just injured myself. And I'm like, you're a clown, mate. I just walked off the clown.
Great. Well, Matthew, it's you've had a fantastic career. Those old legs you referred to are still young. They're still kicking around, and I think St. George are very lucky to have you for this season. I feel fortunate that the young players will be able to learn from some of your experiences. And you're out there, you're a gentleman of the sport, and I thank you so much for your time on the Football Revolution today. Wishing you all the best. We'll check in, but thank you again. Great stories, and let me tell you, I'm definitely coming for one of your barbecues, given your guest list.
Oh, mate.
The people you know, it'll be beautiful.
A fork and knife, that's all I'll tell you.
Good on you. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Matthew.
Matthew. Always appreciate it. Appreciate your time. Bye.
What a fantastic interview with El Chorizo. We already knew he was a great family man, but now we know he has an impressive black book and some fantastic football stories. So we thank him very much for being on the show. Up next, we have the VAR.
Welcome to the Football Revolution, hosted by Gio, Jules and PK.
Welcome back to the Football Revolution. We're into our final segment of tonight's show, and what a show it's been. And we're out to our VAR. So, Julesy and Gio, I'll start with you, Gio. What are we going to be discussing in tonight's VAR segment?
Look, I think we'll touch a little bit further on what you said in the top five, which was around the scheduling and also playing, having games straight after NRL games and so on. So I think that's where we'll head, Julesy.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Between the scheduling, the ground choices, just the forethought from those who are organising that, I think it leaves a lot of issues for our game in the way it's presented to fans. I don't think it gives the fans enough respect, and I don't think it gives the sport enough respect in the media and where they rely on earning those dollars.
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. And I sort of alluded to it in the in my top five segment, and that my pet hate is, look, I understand our season starts in October, then the NRL draw will come out after the halfway during the A-League season. But what really, I guess, annoys me is the fact that there's no flexibility in our scheduling. And I know, look, maybe something that it's a big ask what I'm saying, because there's TV deals locked in, scheduling, whatever it may be, catering. But I think they needed to say, nothing more frustrates me when I watch a game of A-League and I can see the rugby league markings all over the NRL sign, and it might look good on TV, but it's just the ground's probably all chopped up, and it's not good for football.
You can't tell me that the NRL haven't intentionally put those games in those positions on their launching weekend. That's not a fluke.
Yeah, look, the other thing is too, right, without getting off topic is, You look at the Roosters-Rabbitohs game the other day. Because the union was on last week, they chopped up the pitch. They had to spend $150,000, which they had to fund themselves, the actual stadium, to redo the turf. Now, I'm not sure how much the union's paying for a game, but don't you start to look at what gives you the best playing surfaces, what looks best on TV? Doesn't it come down to things like that rather than just saying, oh, someone's booked our facilities?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to let someone come and have a house party at my house and trash my house. I don't care what they're paying. If you're going to leave here, my house is all falling apart and destroyed.
No, look, I absolutely get it. I mean, as I said, Australia's a multicultural country. We love our sport. There's multiple sports playing during certain times of the year. Absolutely get that. But, you know, all I'm saying is let's have some flexibility where we say, okay, well, if we've got, you know, it's bad enough as well that the rain in Sydney was terrible last weekend. But it's like, okay, look, if we've got these games scheduled in NRL, let's maybe take, you know, a Sydney FC home game. You know, Dragons didn't play Cogra round one. Let's go and play the game of Cogra. So where you know that that's the only game we'll be playing over the weekend. Will be the football game as opposed to the rugby league game where it's going to be...
Good call, PK. You know, it's good.
So, I mean, that's my 2 cents around, I guess, the scheduling of those sporting grounds.
Well, I'd go one further. We saw huge success at the start of the year when we took a regional game. Now, why wouldn't you think, okay, Sydney FC are a little bit of a side without a home. Wanderers have been a side without a home. This season, someone in the FFA working with both of those clubs should have thought, this is probably a good season for us to be true New South Wales-based sides and go into some of the other regional zones. Not necessarily north because we've got Newcastle and Mariners that way. South is an area where they're going to be joining in, what are they, 2020 or 2021, whenever. Why wouldn't you be starting to take a game to Canberra? Take a game, I don't know, down the coast somewhere. Do something different. But a 7 p.m. on a Sunday night, even the diehard fans are going, come on, mate, that's, you know, I can't really take the kids. That's home by 9:30, 10 o'clock on a school night, really. It's madness. That doesn't build your sport.
I was going to ask you, lads, and you just hit it, Jules. You hit the nail on the head. Take out the fact that, you know, we're playing after NRL games and take out the fact that there was terrible weather. Who are you trying to attract? What fans are you trying to target having a game on 7 o'clock, as you said, on a school night and a work night? Well, who are you trying to target? It's not school holidays. It's not, you know, it's not around Christmas time. Who are you trying to target?
When you've had the whole weekend to schedule the game. That's what I can't understand. It's different if it's a midweek ACL game and you're playing, you know, Pohang Steelers, and it's like, okay, well, it just is what it is. That's just how the competition format is. But you've had the whole weekend to play the game and you schedule it at 7 p.m. on a Sunday night. I don't understand that.
Yeah, it's absolute nuts.
And what I find is worse is it's not like we had to be Sunday night because the Wanderers, which is the other Sydney side of there, no, they were in Wellington. And Melbourne was the away side, and Melbourne Victory played, you know, when did they play on the Saturday?
Last Saturday night, yeah.
So what would it have mattered if you put, I don't know, a Sunday midday game? You could have had the Sydney FC game. Forget the weather. We can't control the weather. But why couldn't you, if you were going to play at Leichhardt and you were going to be stuck having to play after rugby league, well, we know that Leichhardt fills out during a daytime. That's why the Tigers play their games at 3 o'clock there. Why wouldn't you have done the same thing? And then you could have gone back-to-back into the Wanderers playing against Wellington with the four times that they have in Wellington. I don't get it.
Look, anything would be better than that. So, look, I think we could talk about this forever, lads. I think, you know, for whatever reason, maybe there's something that we don't know, but based on face value, right, Sunday, 7 p.m., disaster zone, especially if you're trying to get a good crowd to see Sydney versus Melbourne City. So, look, let's just put that in the vault and we can address that another day. But let's quickly move on to our last two awards. So, first one being the Paul Honkbar Hogbar Award. And quite often he's being nominated for my goal of the week, but this week I'm giving it to Castro for his air swing.
Le Shank,
whatever you want to call it. It was the Shawshank Redemption, but he didn't redeem anything. So, yeah, like I said, it's quite often I'm patting him on the back this week. I'm giving a kick in the old tush. So, that's my recipient of the award this week.
Lucky for him. Sorry, before you jump in. Lucky for him that he did redeem himself by scoring a deflected goal, and it didn't cost Perth a game. So that's probably...
So it was the Castro Shank Redemption.
It was.
Okay. Let's be fair. Even Castro's goal, I don't think he hit fully clean. I think the deflection had more contact than his foot did.
It was going out for a throwing, I think, but anyway.
So, mate, who's your...
That just shows you how well Castro works it. He knows all his angles.
That's true.
Who's your nomination for the Macca Pest Award? So Daniel McBreen Pest of the Week Award.
It'll come as no surprise to you guys. I think it's been a pest in previous terms, and that is our good old friend VAR. But this time, the pest for me is the selective use of it. So we choose to use it only when it kind of half suits or can create controversy. That's all I can figure out. So you have Roy O'Donovan takes the first of his terrible penalties. Georgievski knocks the ball in the back of the net. That's a goal anytime, anywhere, for the entirety of football that anyone has ever seen it. Yes, you say Georgievski may have just been a step inside the box, but really, how much do we need to question it? There were four other guys from the Mariners that were also stepping into the box.
Let alone any other league in the world, you've got the defenders penalty in line with the penalty taker as he hits it.
That's right. The same happened in Wanderers when Bauerjaarman decided to kick the ball out for a throw-in because he didn't think it was a penalty. So there were players inside the box there. No one said, hold on a second, I want to review this. Let's go and take the penalty again. When Roy O'D took his second attempt of a penalty or the replay in case the sight screens weren't working properly, there were two or three Mariners who stepped inside the box before he'd taken it again. Once again, no one decided to draw that back. So if you're going to start bringing in this VAR system, you can't be that selective with it. And I don't want the VAR in here. So for me, again, it ruined a chance. Yes, it may have got the Mariners a point. Yes, you might be saying, oh, it's the letter of the law, no one can come in. But then it means every single penalty from now on has to be reviewed.
Okay, so we're not sure here. Are you saying that you think the VAR is the pest?
Yes.
We understand, mate. It's all good.
Look, I think the use of it's a pest as well because, you know, like in the end when they decided to review all that, Roy O'Donovan had to take a penalty in the 98th minute. I think from the moment the penalty was first given
it was almost,
to the 98th,
it was almost Sunday
version,
night.
Might have been 4 or 5 minutes.
All right, so we were very clear that the VAR is our pest. But look, that's a wrap for us. That's the end of the show. So thank you very much for listening in, and we look forward to speaking to you again next week.
And if you missed the show tonight, where can we catch the replay of our show?
You certainly can catch it by either downloading the FNR app or visiting the website footballnationradio.com. And you'll hear us there live, or you can catch up on what you might have missed.
Catch you next week.